This week, the first straw polls were held at the UN Security Council in New York as part of the process for deciding who will become the United Nations Secretary General when Antonio Guterres' term ends on the 1st of January 2027. And at this stage, former Vice President of Costa Rica, Rebecca Greenspan, has emerged as a front runner, followed by candidates from Guyana and Argentina. Whoever gets the General Secretary gig will face huge challenges, including financial constraints, hostility from America under Donald Trump, changing geopolitics, of course, and an ever-increasing list of global crises. The process for picking a new Secretary General is idiosyncratic, to say the least, and most definitely a matter of international intrigue. So, joining us once again to help us understand it is former Australian diplomat and now managing editor of International Intrigue, Jeremy Dicker. Jeremy, welcome back to Sunday Extra.
Thanks for having me back. Great to be here.
Now, I use the term straw poll. Can you explain for us what the members of the Security Council actually voted on this week and how?
It's one of these processes in the UN that seems utterly ridiculous for those on the outside, but for those on the inside, they're just not along like it's normal. It's basically an informal, non-binding process, and it actually stems from a big deadlock that happened back in 1981 when the US and China were sort of vetoing one another's preferences for who they'd want to run the UN. And the solution came from a Ugandan ambassador, a guy going by Otunu. He suggested, how about we take a step back, take a deep breath, and use this straw poll process. Basically, it's all secret. It's all anonymous. So you don't know who's voting against someone, who's voting for them. And as wild as it sounds, there is some logic to it. It's sort of the idea is to dial down the drama, step back the confrontation, take away the veto threats and the egos, and just allow a little bit of space for some more negotiation and maneuverability and hope until a consensus candidate finally emerges. And so that's sort of what just happened in New York City. And it's something diplomats and diplomacy nerds like me are very, very excited about.
Yeah, it does sound fascinating. And you can see the logic of it as you explain it. Getting down into the details of the ballot, though, it's clearly not a standard ballot like we'd understand it. What do the Security Council members actually vote on? What are their options?
There's seven candidates who are putting their hand up, and rather than say, I vote for this person, they each have to tick a box saying, I encourage this person's candidacy, I discourage this person's candidacy, or I have no opinion. And it's really the discourage box that is the most important, because there's the possibility that one of those discourages is one of the all-powerful vetoes from one of the permanent five, so the US, the UK, France, China, and Russia. So basically, anyone who got a discourage against them is wondering who has cast that vote and hoping against all hope that it's not one of those permanent five, because if it is, then it's potentially signaling that your candidacy is over. But we don't know. We're not going to know who's casting those discourages until probably a few more weeks, a few more rounds of this straw polling, when eventually those permanent five, they're going to get red ballot cards. So if anyone gets a red ballot card saying we discourage your candidacy, you still don't know exactly who it is, but you know it's serious and it's something to worry about, and your candidacy might be over.
And I think we've found a red card that Donald Trump can't overturn. But Jeremy, you said there are seven candidates in the race. Could you give us a quick rundown of who those candidates are?
In the first round's straw poll, the front runner actually emerged as someone called Rebecca Greenspan. So she's former vice president of Costa Rica. Everyone always thought she'd be one of the top contenders, but seeing her in first place is a pretty solid effort. So she's got 10 votes in favor, and yet, unfortunately for her, one mystery country casting a vote of discouragement. And so everyone's wondering who's done it and why. In second place was a little bit of a surprise, Ambassador Rodriguez. So she's the ambassador for Guyana and a pretty new candidacy. So she got 9 votes and 2 discouragements. And again, everyone's wondering, who doesn't like Ambassador Rodriguez? And then the third was really a big surprise, a guy called Rafael Grossi. He's an Argentine diplomat who's been running the UN's nuclear watchdog for several years. He's always been seen as the front runner, but I think with that sense of, you know, front runner status has come a lot of risk that, you know, he makes enemies along the way. And that's really what this process comes down to. We think of elections as picking the best candidate, but this is really about picking the one that everyone hates the least. As cynical as that might sound, that is the reality of it.
The top three that you've identified for us there all come from Latin America. So in that context, I wonder if you could tell us what the informal regional rotation is.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, almost everything about this process is informal. If you look at the UN Charter, the founding UN document, it offers almost nothing of use to help us as a world choose our next UN Secretary General. But basically, as a result, over history, we've sort of built these informal rules to help kind of everyone feel like it's fair. And one of those is that you rotate the regions, you know, whose turn it is. And so there's a widespread, widely accepted expectation and tradition that the next quote-unquote turn is the region of Latin America and the Caribbean. So that's why almost all of the candidates, including those top three that we've just outlined, that's why they're mostly from Latin America and the Caribbean. There are some other candidates in there, some wild cards.
And indeed, there was a late entrant, and it was none other than the man who designed this straw poll process. So why was it that the Ugandan candidate, Olara Otunnu, was such a late entrant, and has it ruffled some UN feathers, Jeremy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's not done very well that first round. He came out with five discourages, which is a lot of discouragement.
Yes.
And so that you got to wonder what he was thinking. He's not from the region that everyone says its turn it is. There's all kinds of theories, but I would suspect it's going to be tough for him to win at this point. But really, a lot of the candidates, you know, I sort of mentioned everyone's hoping they don't get knocked out by a veto. And that's what it really comes down to. So it may well be that he and the others that we haven't got around to mentioning, that they might just hope they can kind of fly under the radar, let the big names get knocked out because they've said something that the US didn't like or Russia didn't like, and then, you know, pull a bit of a Stephen Bradbury and cross the finish line in front. So yeah, it may well be what he has in mind. And there's a few others there who I suspect are hoping for something similar. And there could be more candidates that emerge. There's nothing in the rules saying we can't get more nominees come through.
Also really interesting because the straw polls are a significant part of the process, but there's been quite a lot of formality and canvassing going on already. I mean, you can read all the CVs of the declared candidates online. They've each submitted a vision statement. So it's a weird mix in a way of obscure procedure and then great transparency.
Yeah.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Jeremy Dicker from International Intrigue about the intriguing process of selecting a new UN Secretary General. Jeremy, all nine Secretary Generals of the UN to date have been male. Is there much of a push for a female Secretary General? What do you think the chances are that number 10 will be a female?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 80 years of nonstop male leadership at the top of the UN. And the reality is, yes, there's pretty widespread hope that this could be the time. But we've seen this come and go before. The last few rounds, there's been a similar hope, and just at the end of the day, it's never going to be the number one consideration, particularly for the five powerful permanent members of the Security Council. And, you know, and to the contrary, the US right now is sort of actively signaling that it's not going to be relevant at all. It's just going to focus on who they think is best for the job. I think it's important. It goes to the legitimacy of the institution, that you kind of feel like it's representative of the humanity it purports to represent. And that's one part of it. And, you know, we now have a woman out in front, Rebecca Grinspan. So this may well be her moment.
As chalices go to have passed to you, though, it's a pretty challenging one. Jeremy, could you outline for us what you think the key challenges of being the next UN Secretary General are?
Yeah, I mean, it is a total hospital pass, put it mildly right now. Whoever becomes the next UN boss is inheriting a UN system that's probably at its greatest moment of crisis since its beginning. You could look at that in a number of different ways. One is just purely financial. It's had a sort of 7% budget cut in the last year. You know, and that translates to a lot of programs, a lot of agencies, a lot of jobs getting slashed. But I've always really seen the financial condition of the UN as a symptom of a deeper problem, which is that some of the biggest financial underwriters of the UN are increasingly becoming skeptical of the value and role of the UN today. And, you know, chief among them is obviously the US. It's traditionally been the number one financier of the UN, and it's now the number one country that is in arrears, several billion dollars in arrears. You know, that's partly a Trump thing, but it's not exclusively a Trump thing. I mean, we've seen this happen over the decades where the US has felt a frustration. You know, once in history has there ever been a UN boss who didn't get reappointed to a second term. That was Boutros Ghali, and that was because of a US veto, unhappy at how he talked about the way the US was throwing its weight around the world. So it's not a new thing, but it definitely is an exacerbating, accelerating trajectory under Donald Trump. So it's really, really tough whoever picks up the gig. But I whoever wins, I'd remind them of the old line by one of the earliest UN bosses, Dag Hammarskjöld, you know, who famously said the UN was never to get us to heaven, it was just to keep us from hell. And as much as the UN has its problems and its critics, and, you know, I understand that. I started my career in the UN, in fact. You know, I understand that, but it's still the least worst option we have as an international community. And I think what it needs is for all of all of our countries to re-engage and figure out how to get the most out of it.
Will the next UN Secretary General be coming into office at a time when the office itself is at a low ebb in terms of international status and the capacity to influence global events?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the ways I think about this selection process for who might come next. I think a lot of the time in history, the big five members have really just wanted someone quiet and malleable that is not going to get in their way. But every now and then you get someone that, for whatever reason, just has real gravitas and convening power. And, you know, the news cameras rush to hear what they've got to say. And I think of someone like Kofi Annan, for example. So that's a little bit of an X factor. And looking at the candidates we've got at the moment, you know, Rebecca Grinspan, I think, probably does have that X factor. You know, very experienced, very highly regarded, former vice president, of Costa Rica. Whereas, you know, maybe, you know, another candidate, Ambassador Rodriguez, by all accounts, really brilliant, effective operator, but, you know, pretty obscure and perhaps less likely to stop the reporters in their tracks to hear what she has to say. So, yeah, I think that's one of the factors. I hope we get someone with the kind of convening power and gravitas to help steer our world through what's a pretty wild time at the moment. And yeah, Grinspan could be the one.
Yes, well, I'm not going to ask you to put your hand on your heart and say that you've read every word of every vision statement and CV, but from the range of candidates, it sounds like it's your view that Rebecca Grinspan is the strongest and potentially best candidate in the as yet unfinished field.
Yeah, I think she'd be fantastic. I'm honestly a real fan of Rafael Grossi as well, the Argentine diplomat. He's brilliant. It is an incredibly tough gig that he's doing as the UN watchdog. I just think the reality is, though, he's probably made a few enemies recently, including among the powerful five. One recent example is he blew the whistle on Iran's very secretive buildup of highly enriched uranium, almost weapons grade. And it was his whistle that the US and Israel subsequently used to justify last year's attacks on Iranian nuclear sites. China and Russia are both on the record raising their concerns about the role that he and his agency played. Although really, I mean, it's his job to blow the whistle, and maybe we should be wondering what Iran was doing accumulating so much highly enriched uranium. But yeah, so I think realistically, he's probably made a couple too many powerful enemies to make it through, but we'll see.
And it's interesting that you mentioned two countries there, and I look in the Rafael Grossi discouraged list, and there were indeed two discouraged votes in that first straw poll.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's my money that it's one or both of Russia and China, but you never know. There are all kinds of wild reasons why someone might sneak a little discourage in there. So, for example, we mentioned Grinspan from Costa Rica. Like, who would potentially vote against her? And you know, my money, maybe we'll get some angry letters at the ABC, but my money is it could be one of the 10 other members of the council, Colombia or Panama. And, you know, they both potentially would prefer someone else in the top job. And so, you know, for example, Colombia openly prefers someone called Michelle Bachelet, former president of Chile. And so if that's who you want in the top job, then it sort of makes a perverse but logical sense that you would maybe throw a speed hump in Grinspan's way and hope that your person might get through.
So, Jeremy, we know that there are going to be more rounds of straw polling. We know that more candidates could still enter. When will we know who the next UN Secretary General is?
Everyone agrees that the sooner the better, because there's got to be a transition period until the current occupant, Guterres, finishes on the 31st of December. So everyone agrees the sooner the better, but there is no real deadline. And I think the reality is there is a lingering risk that we could see another really damaging deadlock, you know, between the US and some of its rivals among that permanent five. So this could be a photo finish. This could come right down to the wire, or it might be wrapped up in the next straw poll with, you know, Grinspan or someone else kind of emerging as a clear favorite. She only needs 9 votes in favor. She's already got 10. And she just needs 0 vetoes against. And, you know, maybe she doesn't have any at the moment and it's just sneaky Colombia or Panama throwing a cat among the pigeons. We don't know.
Well, it's been great speaking with you, Jeremy. You get only encouragers and no discouragers from Sunday Extra. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That is Jeremy Dicker, the managing editor of International Intrigue.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.